He's pleased to be joined by the NHL and NBC's Pierre Maguire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Well, JR, good morning. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Pierre.
All right, Pierre, next hour, we're going to have a guy celebrating a birthday, and that's not the reason we're having him on the show, but Brad Berry, the head coach of the University of North Dakota, will join us. He's got three...
Coach of the year.
Three Sens prospects on his team this past year. Yep. I think when the college hockey season went on pause, as they say, and has now been canceled, they were the number one team in the United States. But I wanted to ask you, how rare is it for one NHL team to have that many prospects on one college team?
It's pretty rare, but I'll give you an example. UMass Amherst, Mario Ferraro last year was a San Jose prospect, and he signed with them. And then just yesterday, John Leonard out of UMass is a San Jose prospect. He signed with San Jose. So they had two. Three is a little bit rare, but it's not foreign concept to have two. Three is a little bit rare.
And not necessarily a bad thing when you're talking about a program of the caliber of North Dakota.
No, it's very good. By the way, I was in touch with Brad last week to congratulate him on being Coach of the Year. He's had a phenomenal run there at North Dakota. He wasn't just there as a head coach. He was there as an assistant, too, and he helped recruit some spectacular players there when Dave Haxtell was a head coach. So, I mean, his career has been really dignified out there in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and he's really made a huge difference. After Dave left, Dave Haxtell was a tremendous college coach at Dakota, really, really good. And after he left, you know, obviously it was a big test for Brad, and Brad's handled it fantastically well.
How much do NHL teams, Pierre, look at when they draft a player? Because a lot of times they're at a different level, tier two, to the U.S. Junior League, to prep school. Do they look at where the player is going to get set? And I'll say in relation to Ottawa, especially in a guy like Pinto, who certainly seemed to fast-track after being drafted in the second round and going to a great UND program.
Yeah, no question about it. It really does. People look at that. That's all part of the evaluation process, but it doesn't mean that players can't come from foreign markets, too. Look at Ottawa, for instance. Last year they signed Brian DeCourt out of Arizona State. I don't think they really paid attention to where he went to school. They just liked the fact that he was a good goalie and he's got a chance to play. So, you know, when you're talking earlier in the draft, I think people really pay attention to that. There's always going to be dark horses, and I think that it becomes less of an issue when you're talking about maybe fourth to seventh round, something like that. But in the early rounds, I do think that plays a role.
In your opinion, should Shane Pinto come out of school and turn pro, or do you think he should stay for another year?
I think one more year would really be good for him. This reminds me a lot of, and I'm not comparing them because they play different positions, but Cale Makar at UMass Amherst playing in one World Junior and then staying at UMass Amherst and taking his team to the Final Four and eventually winning the Hobey Baker. And he's never had to spend a day in the American Hockey League. I could see Shane Pinto the same thing if he spends one more year at the University of North Dakota. It's not to say that it's a pro program, but it's run very similar to a professional program. They've developed so many players over time. Their facilities are off the charts. They're probably as good or better than any NHL team's facilities. Their rink is as good or better than any NHL rink. Their coaching staff is phenomenal. They're always bringing in really good players to push the other guys. I know a boy that's not draft eligible this year, but is heading there a year from now, Scott Morrow, and he's a tremendous player. He's a kid from here in Connecticut that went out to Shattuck St. Mary's, and he's a big defenseman. He'll probably be a late first, early second round pick in next year's draft, and he's already committed to Dakota. So they've got a lot of good things going on there. I wouldn't be in a rush to take a player out of there.
I know that you're very familiar with all the kids that are getting drafted either last year or this year because your son, of course, is of that age, and you've seen a lot of these kids. Shane Pinto is from Long Island.
Yep.
Was he? I think when he was drafted by the Sens, I'll say that I don't want to say it was out of the blue, but it was kind of like, wow, not a lot of people were that familiar with him. Was he a fairly big name in terms of going through minor hockey in the U.S. Northeast?
In this area, he was. I mean, everything's obviously different, but in this area, he definitely was. I think the biggest thing with Shane was just his ability to score. A lot of people were very well aware of his ability to score, and so that made a big difference. But in this area, he was a big guy. There's no question about it.
In the case of Bernard Docker, he's done a couple of years. My guesstimate or thought is he probably
he's
comes
different.
Out. But,
yeah.
at the end of the day, Pierre, would it be the worst thing if he ended up going back for his junior year?
No, it wouldn't be. But the problem you get to then is the potential for Justin Schultz. And that's what you got to be aware of. And just for those that don't know, Justin Schultz spent 3 years at Wisconsin, then he went back for a fourth. And it's an amazing story. Their team was actually playing Colorado College, talking about Wisconsin in the playoffs. And Bobby Murray and the people from Anaheim were actually playing in Denver against the Colorado Avalanche. And they thought as soon as the Wisconsin was eliminated or their season was over, he would jump on their plane and go with them. And he didn't. He did not go. Wisconsin got beat, and you know, Justin Schultz went to free agency, and that's the problem you have when you leave him in an extra year, the potential for that.
Do you normally with general man? I mean, you can never say never. You never know 100%. But do you have would a typical general manager have a pretty good feel for a guy he needs to potentially worry about that might want to see it all the way through to a senior season and become a free agent?
They better, absolutely. And that's where your assistant managers are really important. That's where your intel from being on the road, from your boots on the ground matters. There were lots of rumors about Justin Schultz, but again, Anaheim thought he was coming right in because he was a very good player. He was going to fit in perfectly. He wasn't going to have to spend time in the American Hockey League, but he decided to go in a different direction. And so it's really important. And by the way, the man that's the assistant GM in Anaheim, David McNabb, is a Wisconsin graduate. He was a goalie there. He's a longtime assistant GM in the league, and he was a chief scout in the league. And he's got intel as good or better than anybody. So it just shows it could happen to anybody. You got to be really well aware of that. But that's where if you're a manager, you got to have really trusted people that have tons of information.
In the spirit of the rule, do you like what the Rileys and the Schultzes and the VCs and the Foxes have done? And do you think that'll be closed off in the next CBA?
Well, they're a little different, all of them. Fox is a little different. He was a trade. VC was, you know, a defection. But I do think it's something that will be potentially closed off because teams don't want to lose those assets, especially if they're kids that have been developed for 4 years in college and all of a sudden you say, ooh, he's not a boy anymore, he's a man. That's the one. You're starting to see these quotes from the managers, which is absolutely true and has been going on for a long time, and I'll get back to it in a second, but you're seeing these quotes from the managers saying, well, he's not an 18 or 19-year-old, he's a 22 or 23-year-old with a man's body, not a boy's body, and that's what people are talking about. And it goes back to what Lou Lamoriello did for years and years and years in New Jersey. They were not afraid to take college players because that was Lou's background. David Conte is chief scout. That was his background. He's a Colgate guy. And so they'd leave players in college. They wouldn't have to pay the major junior development fees because there were no development fees for U.S. colleges and leave them in there. And all of a sudden, you'd get players that were a lot older coming in and playing, especially at depth positions, and they would thrive. They would really thrive, and it really helped New Jersey churn out a lot of players. And then their knowledge of free agents coming out of college. John Madden's an example at the University of Michigan. Brian Rafalski at the University of Wisconsin. So that stuff, you know, Sean, as you're aware, the development process for some of those kids in college, they stay in a little bit longer. It helps, but I think the league will try to close that down.
I was going to say, it seems odd to me that we've got essentially three sets of rules as far as how long a team has the rights to, right?
Yeah.
Major junior player draft, you got him for 2 years. If you don't sign him, he goes back in the
draft.
In. College, yeah. It can be up to 4 years. And then the European guys, right, you have them for, I don't even know what the rule, it used to be forever.
Well, it used to be forever.
Yeah, I don't know why. You still see some guys on not protected lists, but still we have the rights to this player, even though he's been in Russia for 15 years or whatever. It just seems to me the logical thing, and I'm looking at it from the outside, is just to have continuity right across the board where it's the same. Whether it be at a certain age, if you haven't signed a player that you've drafted by a certain age or whatever, I just think it should be the same for everybody.
Yeah, it's a more difficult question to answer than you think, but I think there has to be some regulation to it. Absolutely, I agree with that. You know, I know an agent that utilizes it as a tool to recruit players because he has utilized it at least two or three different times to help himself and his players. Maybe he doesn't like where the player was drafted and he thinks there's a better opportunity for him to play in the NHL when they come out of college. And I've seen this agent do that, and he's been very good at it, and he's a very good agent. He works unbelievably well for his constituents. But it's not really fair to the NHL team that put all this time and effort into drafting the player, cultivating the player, having them to all their rookie camps, and then all of a sudden the kid says, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go somewhere else.
Yeah, it was originally Brian Lawton, and that rule in the previous CBA was go play junior. He sent Ben Clymer and Parrish to Seattle. They become unrestricted free agents. Also, the difficulty with the college one, JR, to your point, you're not eligible to sign if you're in college, so that's a bit of a loophole to cover over. I think the NHL's done a pretty good job. As far as collegiate hockey itself, Pierre, has it ever been any better than it is right now as far as producing young men and producing NHL players?
No, you're going to have somebody on that's an example of that with Brad Berry. I mean, you've got Greg Carville, who's an Ottawa Tyne, who's the assistant or the head coach at UMass Amherst, who's done just an unbelievable job there just in the last 2 years. Mario Ferrer, John Leonard, Cale Makar, and there are more to come from him, too. I mean, he's done a magnificent job there. If you look at Jack Bedini signed out of Harvard the other day. Still, I think maybe Jack Drury's going to sign out there. You look at the guys leaving Boston College. You look at Trevor Zegras out of BU. You can go down the line. There are tons of them. Look at what's gone on at Minnesota State at Mankato and the kids that are leaving there that are signing. So, no, I don't think we've ever been better in terms of developing pro players. But I think part of that, Sean, it goes back to what I was saying before. NHL GMs are wanting more physically mature players, and I think that's one of the things that college will give you. It doesn't give you as many stars. Major junior produces superstar players. And so that's the one difference. But I think it helps you to have more mature guys that don't need as much physical tuning up coming out of college.
All right. The NHL Players Association published its annual players poll yesterday. Now, so 500 of the 700 odd players participated. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean they voted on every single category, but it's a pretty good cross section of how players are feeling about their fellow players. And I won't go through all of them with you, but Connor McDavid winning best forward, not a surprise. Victor Hedman, best defenseman. Are you surprised that Carey Price got 42% of the votes? Now, this is peers now. So we're talking about players thinking who is the best of the position. Carey Price at 42%. Vasilevsky is next at 17%. Are you surprised still to this day that Carey Price holds as much sway with the players?
No, I'm not surprised because players have to play against Montreal all the time. And they know the reality is that Montreal's record is pretty darn good when you consider the level of player that they have in terms of overall depth. And Montreal hangs around in a lot of games and wins a lot of games and carries a big part of that. And there's an intimidation factor, too, because he's still Carey Price. It's a lot like when Patrick Roy was playing. There's an intimidation factor whenever those guys are in goal that really matters, and players are aware of that. So I'm not surprised. I think the one thing that will change it a little bit is if Vasilevsky and Tampa were ever able to win a cup. I think all of a sudden he goes right to the top of the mountain. He's a very intimidating guy to play against.
This conversation for the goalies especially always boils down to, if I had one game to play tonight at the Olympics or the Game 7 for Stanley Cup, would Carey Price still be your choice for that, Pierre?
He probably would be now, but I Vasilevsky's somebody that I've watched a ton, and I do a lot of Tampa games, both in Tampa and on the road, and just watching his level of preparedness and just watching his commitment to the game and his size. That's one thing I'll take away from their lot. I'll take away from a lot of these All-Star weekends, but the San Jose All-Star weekend, I'll take away, Kendall Coyne's speed because she was just so darn fast. But the biggest thing I'll take away from that is Henrik Lundqvist looking at me after I interviewed Vasilevsky in the dressing room, and he said, I've never seen a guy that big play this position. I mean, he's a humongous person. He's thick. He looks like a tight end for a football team. He really, truly does. So, and he's an amazing athlete.
Yeah, has been doing a lot of his off-season training here in Ottawa. Not sure if he still does, but had been doing it for a while. Is he, and not that Carey Price necessarily has the most stellar playoff record as well, but is it fair criticism of Vasilevsky to say, look, all-world talent on a fantastic team, but got to get you're not getting my utmost respect until you get it done in the playoffs?
That's what we were just talking about. 100% agree. And I think if he ever made an elongated playoff run, and eventually if it leads to a Stanley Cup or gets to a final, I think that changes the batting order pretty significantly.
All right. Best ice, and we've talked to you, and listen, you've done finals. I was, Edmonton used to be forever best ice under with the old rink. They've moved to the new rink. It's still second on the list, but Montreal at 32%, best ice by far, according to NHL players in the league. Any surprise there?
No, not really, because I spent a lot of time in that building. They had some major ice issues early on, and I think they made a major commitment, especially after the Molson family bought the team from the Gillettes. They made, and Jeff was a hockey player, so he understands the importance of good ice. And I think they wanted to have a certain style of play, which was fast, up-tempo, attack-oriented. And the only way you can really do that is having good ice. So I know they made a pretty significant commitment as an organization to do that, which is great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that speaks to the commitment of the ownership and the people that work for the team.
Edmonton, Winnipeg, second and third. Fourth on the list would be a surprise, I think, to a lot of people, just given what we think. Vegas.
Yes.
And I remember when Washington and Vegas played in the final, and we all know how hot Washington can get. But you talked about how really good the ice was in Vegas.
It was phenomenal, and it still is. And again, that comes down to the ice crew. Most of the guys that work there, there's a couple guys from Canada, and there's a couple guys from Chicago. And so they've got a major background in terms of how to produce quality ice surfaces. And their commitment level to that building as an organization is phenomenal. It's not just their practice facility as well. I spent a lot of time at their practice facility since they've been in the league, and now their practice ice is really good as well. So, I mean, it's an organizational commitment.
Is a huge part of that as far as climate, we'll say Tampa in June to Vegas, quite simply that
dry.
The humidity level is that much lower?
Yeah, it is. But the one thing I'll say about Mr. Vinnick in Tampa, they've really chilled the building down a lot over the years. It's gotten a lot colder, especially at ice level. But I also know their dehumidification systems in Tampa have improved significantly over time. And again, that's commitment of ownership. Mr. Vinnick's put, you know, over $50 million of his own money into that building.
No, I can tell you it's cold in Ottawa, too. Holy cow.
It's cold in most of the buildings. You know, sometimes when you hear my voice being raspy, it's not because I had a late night. It's because it's dark cold where I'm working.
No, I've sat in the stands for a couple of Sens games this year, and literally it felt like the air conditioning unit was right above where I was sitting. It was that cold. But again, if it leads to better ice at the end of the day, that leads to better games and better play, etc. This was an interesting aspect of the player poll as well. Should the NHL adopt a more relaxed game day dress code?
Most of the players said yes.
73%. So basically 3 in 4 said they'd like to see it. Now, when they say relaxed, that can be open to interpretation. We see in the NBA, we see guys, that's a style that or a non-style that guys are going with. What's your feeling on that? You've had a boy that's grown up and played the game and suit and ties and all that. Like, what's your feel on it?
I'm still a shirt and tie guy. I believe in it. That's just my own thing. I just think you look so good. You know, one of the things that's pretty cool, as you know, my daughter's a pretty good rower and been to the Nationals a lot and had some success there and been to the San Diego Classic with her team. And I'll never forget the first time she came home before, she was really young, before her first time going to a major national event. And she said, "We're going to travel in sweats, and I just don't think that's appropriate. I think we should travel like hockey players." And so I said, "Well, talk to your coach about it. It's a good thought." You know, she's maybe 13 or 14. So I said, "Talk to your coach about it." So she did, and eventually they got a compromise, and they wore either nice pantsuits or skirts, and I thought that was great. And they really looked good when they got off the plane in San Diego or down in Sarasota or wherever they were going. So I think there's some merit to that. I know one thing. I always wore a shirt and tie.
All right, there we go. And we'll end with a couple more. Funniest player in the NHL, and I had no idea. I don't know. Funniest player in the NHL is voted by his fellow players is Keith Yandel.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
He's extremely funny. He's witty. There's a lot of, for those that are listening to Barstool and Spittin' Chicklets, Ryan Whitney's a really funny guy. He is. And Keith Yandel's very, very similar to him. They're both from Boston. They have a little bit of that Massachusetts swagger. Keith's very, very funny.
Now, is he, you're always between the benches. I mean, is he a funny trash-talking guy on the ice, or is he pretty quiet on the ice?
No. He's not much of a trash-talker. He's just funny in terms of relating with officials or talking to his teammates or talking to guys off face-offs. And it's not demeaning at all. He's a very funny guy.
All right. 70% of NHL players say Gritty is the best mascot.
By the way, there's one part of that poll that I did not agree with.
Yep.
The trash-talking one?
Yep.
Matthew Tkachuk's name is nowhere on that list.
Well, I was surprised to see that as well. Both best and worst trash talker. Yeah. He's not on neither list. So.
Yeah, no, I can just tell you what, there are very few guys. Now, some of the guys on that list that were on there deserve to be on there, both good and bad.
Yep.
But Matthew Tkachuk influences the outcome of a game as well or better than anybody in the league because of his mouth. Now, his skill level is excessive, and he's really physical, and he's not afraid, and he's got, you know, tremendous finishing ability. But he can drive people nuts.
Yeah, best trash talker and worst, by the way, on both was Brad Marchand. But Drew Doughty is on both lists. Ryan Reeves, Patrick Maroon, PK Subban, and Nick Cousins were the names
Nick
mentioned.
Nick is underrated, but he's very, very, very talkative.
There we go. On that note, we'll let you go. And thank you again for your time, and look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Awesome visiting you guys. Great discussion today. Thanks a lot, Sean. Thanks a lot, JR. Have a great day, everybody. Please be safe.